Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Now, of course, it's Monday again, and so that means that Edwin has joined me once again. Hi, Edwin.
G'day, Martin. It's staying positive and party.
Absolutely. Well, what else do you expect? You know, we just got to make the best of it, right?
Well, that's right. Look, we've got we've been given the three-stage plan to unlocking us, taking the handcuffs off and going out and running wild. So staying positive. There's a number of things coming up with that we can do. And just imagine for a minute there, Martin, if we were in China and our businesses were told that we could only open up our businesses or run our businesses, our operation for 3 days in the week or even 1 day in the week because we've got to ration the electricity. I wouldn't be able to blow dry my hair, Martin.
Yeah, and is it true that it's all carefully arranged around your birthday?
No, look, that's Gladys. She gave me a call and said, "Hey, what would you like for your birthday?" And said, "Oh, look, let's just let it rip, open up." And she said, "Okay, 1st of December, you can party." So, we'll just have to get together somewhere in Hyde Park or preferably the mountains, Martin,
Absolutely.
So we could just get together. But look, imagine all these poor bastards in Victoria, what they must be going through, the envy that they must have of the New South Welshmen, the brothers and sisters in New South Wales. I mean, so you can only just stay positive. I'm even wearing colourful clothing, Martin. That's how positive I am.
Yeah, I noticed that. Very good. I'm in the same clothing as normal. That's my normal show attire. But, of course, down in Victoria, they've actually shut down construction for a couple of weeks, haven't they?
Did they get it right or did they get it totally wrong is a big question, Martin. So what's happening there? What is that, $300 million down the gurgler or could even be more? Yeah, over a two-week period that the construction's fully closed down, and I believe the federal government is also going to make some inquiries as to the validity of all that. So is the state government going to compensate the construction industry if it's deemed to be unlawful? I mean, anything goes. All I can say, Martin, is that thank God that those predators or that company Predator or whatever it is that they've contracted to put in force the health mandates and keep the Victorians safe by making sure that they've got the paper masks on and beat them down a bit every now and again just to knock some sense into them. Thank God that those blokes aren't operating in New South Wales. That's all I can say.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. It's a good job we don't have a bubbly economy, isn't it? A good job it isn't over-reliant on property or mining or, construction. Oh, hang on a moment.
That's right. The sarcasm continues, Martin. That's why we're staying positive. Thank God that we don't have a two-tiered or three-tiered economy relying on education, construction, and mining. I mean, heavens forbid, should any of those come into strife in the next few months or have some already come into strife?
Who knows? We'll watch and wait and see. And talking about watching and waiting and seeing, we should flick over and talk about Evergrande, right? Because I've been fascinated by all of the Western reaction and Western talk about the Lehman moment, et cetera, right? But actually, people within China have rather a different perspective on this, don't they?
Oh, look, definitely. And that's what we said before. And you and I spoke about it and the WeChat chatter has alluded us to it. Looking at it from their perspective, not the Westernized as they say, say it. And even now, I just read a couple of articles in the mainstream media with regards to some reporters are talking about that it's not as what the West is, the West has been saying, that the government isn't going to step in. They're also now alluding to the fact that the government may step in. But that's what we said before, that it's planned, it's orchestrated. They know it's a political move by Xi's government. It is a a cat and mouse scenario there at the moment. My understanding of it, my very, very limited understanding of it as to how they try to explain it to me, is that Xi's basically trying to stop his political opponents from siphoning money overseas through this company. So it's basically it's a wait and see for Xi and his government to see who's going to come in to basically rescue it, or how far they're going to allow it to decimate and go into this hole that they're in, this holding pattern and hole that they've created for themselves, this financial hole, and who's going to rescue them. Because once that happens, then my understanding from what the WeChat chatterers are telling me is that Xi will then know who is politically opposed and who's the opposition, how they've been trying to siphon the money out. So it's a lot more than what's been playing out, but the Western world, it seems to be stuck in neutral, or seems to be stuck in some sort of overdrive with the Evergrande. But as I said, and as we spoke about it before, is this Evergrande is just one of many building companies there, and it's going to affect the Western world more than internally, because they've got other issues and they've got other things at play there, and issues that they're trying to deal with, which one of the main ones is right now is this one of two things is, one, the shortages of electricity, and secondly is the crypto, this restriction on crypto. So that's what the WeChat chatterers are basically focusing on now, because they're with regards to Evergrande, they've moved on and they're looking at the implications. And obviously, when you've got you can't invest in crypto, you can't invest in the local economies, or the old market, as they call it, the property market. Well, where else is there to invest? And it's for the local WeChat chatterers, or the people that can invest in here in Australia, it's obviously land. Land is where the value is, and that's what the focus is from the local WeChat chatterers, and also international WeChat chatterers.
Absolutely, yeah, land is where it is. It's interesting, though, that going back to Evergrande, they actually knocked down some of the partly built apartments for another building company quite recently, right? So there's actually a show on that. I might put that up, because it's quite interesting just watching them knock down, a few, like 6, 8, 10, partly finished construction, a high-rise construction things, because basically they're so badly built, they haven't been able to finish them, and they'd fall down under their own weight if they didn't destroy them. But it's remarkable.
Well, anybody would think it's Opal Tower and Mascot Tower when you look at those videos, Martin. I have seen them, and how they've seen some of those videos, and how they stick Rio bars into the support columns, and it's basically a sand. It's ants would have a field day. And look, you could say that other bigger objects took down the Twin Towers, but over there in China, all you need is a couple of wasps and some ants, and that'll take them down as well.
Yeah, and if you watch the replay of that particular set of demolition, it's quite funny, because there's one that doesn't go off properly, right? It's sort of stuck there at the end in sort of a half-finished, half-demolished state, and I'm thinking, that's a bit symbolic, really.
Look, it is. It is not only symbolic of what's happening there in, obviously, with construction in China, but construction in general. Yeah, look, taking the focus away from the essence of what building should have been and should be all about, and that is providing safe dwellings for the nationals, for people. But anyway, look, that's another, we could go around in circles with that, and you and I know where we both stand with regards to that, and how governments, how corrupt politicians, construction industry, and spruikers, property spruikers all around the world. What we see here in Sydney is just it's just a small section of what really happens around the world. I mean, I've got family that live all around the world, and they also film in on what's happening there in their regions and in their cities. And it's almost like a carbon copy of what's going on here. And it's just this whole focus of get rich quick by putting money into high risk ventures with badly built and badly engineered or under engineered off the plan developments.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, the whole concept of property and how property and finance and politics, you know, is all messed in together is a very interesting question. There's a current inquiry running at federal at the moment talking about housing supply issues. And I actually put a submission the other day, which was accepted, right? But I basically decided to poke the ant's nest and basically say, you can't just look at supply side things. You've got to look at it holistically. You've got to understand the money flows. You've got to understand all of the motivations of the property developers, et cetera, right? Now, I'm sure I won't be very popular, but I decided to call it out and call out the elephant in the room.
Well, it's I think it's more like a dinosaur in the room than an elephant. You know, it's there. They know it. But the interesting thing, Martin, is now there's discussions around the changes to the lands and titles office, the digital certificates. You know, what would you call it? Some conspiracy theorists are already talking about: do we own the land? Are we entitled to it now that it's gone digital? Was the transfer legally bound by the wording that they use? I mean, with law, with the black letter of the law, it all comes back to the actual wording and the meaning and the context. And it can be very one word could change the whole meaning of a legal precedent. So then this is what a lot of people are questioning now. Was that change made lawfully or purposefully? Did they use those words to make it so vague that with this new digital certificate, we basically don't own anything? So how do you like them apples? So it's going to be one of these things that are going to unravel as time goes on, and we're going to move on to other controlling measures that the government's going to implement, and it's just wait and see.
Well, yeah, I would argue that they've actually been migrating onto this digital platform for a long, long time. And in fact, the current physical title certificates are effectively images of the digital ones, right? So I'm not so worried as some people. I've had a number of people say to me, hey, hang on a moment, what's this going on in New South Wales, right? The digitalisation of title has been going on for some time, about 15 years. But the point, of course, is, the quick question is, if it's purely an electronic message somewhere in a system, then you are totally reliant on the robustness of the system. It's hack proof, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? And with so many other things that control us at the moment and actually determine what we can and what we can't do, it's all down to the messages, right? So what happens if the messages get scrambled, lost? If backups don't back up, we are very much in the hands of the digital world. And unfortunately, I think I'm a bit more sceptical than some as to how robust those digital things are. I quite like the physical bit of paper, and I quite like the alternative backup to the zeros and ones sitting on a hard drive somewhere.
Well, that's right. And there's always teething issues. There's always going to be teething problems as things evolve and develop. And Australia Post are finding the issues now that they can't cope with the amount of people that are in that the governments have locked us in, and they can't cope with the online orders and the whinging and bitching and complaining about that. Maybe we should give the managers another gold watch or some shit like that, so they can pull the finger out and employ more people. I mean, what did you think was going to happen? What did you honestly think was going to happen? And we try to do bank transactions, and sometimes they're large transactions that exceed our limits, and we have to call the bank. And you could be sitting waiting for somebody to serve you for up to 2-3 hours. It's easier just to get in the car and go through the pain of going to the bank physically, lining up, doing this, doing that. It's quicker, it's easier, and you get a lot more done that way than it is to be waiting online. I mean, today I had a couple of transactions to do with regards to the RMS and with license and registration and so forth, and I was on the phone for hours. Absolutely insane. The only department that will take your call immediately within minutes, Martin, is the tax office. Call the tax office and you'll get somebody that'll pick that little baby up quick, smart, and they'll say, how much do you owe and how would you like to pay it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've noticed the same thing. I've had the need to actually connect with a number of different government departments over the last couple of weeks. And going around in those holding patterns, right, you sort of go around in circles and then you ultimately end up with a menu, and then you push a one of the options, then you go into another holding pattern, and then you speak to somebody who says, well, I can't solve that, so I've got to flick you off to somewhere else. Oh, it's hours and hours and hours. And they claim that it's much more efficient with everything online, but no, it's not. And if anything goes wrong online, who are you going to call?
Yeah, you call Batman. Look, these are the issues that obviously are, as I said, we're going through teething issues. We're going through, wait and see, watch and see, learning curves, whatever else you want to call it, whatever else you want to throw at it. But going back to the physical stuff with regards to supply chain breakdowns, and as we talk about, it is a property rant, and all this has implications and ramifications on the building industry and if you want things done. One of the reasons why we've had some issues with banking was because we have to pay invoices in order to make sure that tradespeople, we're going to be front and center at the scheduled time, to do ongoing work. Because if you don't get them, if they don't get the invoice, I mean, I don't blame some of these guys, because they aren't getting paid. In some cases, they're running accounts, 60 day accounts, 90 days accounts. So I like to make sure that, particularly with the work that we're doing, that they get paid quickly, even before the invoice is due, so that I know that I've got them next time around at the right fee price, at the right fee for hour or price per hour plus materials price. Otherwise, you're going to get hammered. And this is what a lot of other people are going to be facing with all these disruptions. It's going to impact everything else. And it goes back to, obviously, the construction. It goes back to rectification work. It goes back to property, as it is a property rant. So, all these delays upon delays, traveling, frustrations, and so forth, it's just adds greater costs to what we would have otherwise got things done a lot quicker, a lot more efficiently, if we were able to move around a little bit more freely, regardless of, I mean, that's, all the health stuff to the side. It's a changing world, Martin. It really, really is a changing world. And it's a week by week scenario. It's a, you can't even call it quarterly. You got to look at things we were looking at it on a month by month basis. Now we're looking at things on a week by week basis as to costings, what we do, how we offer, what type of offers we make, what conditions we put on our offers when we're making our offers for our clients and so forth. There's a lot more to take in, and there's a lot more to research, and there's a lot more to discern before we start lobbying offers, before we start talking price, because it is all going to impact, not necessarily straight away, but it's going to impact clients and buyers and even sellers for that matter in the future as well.
Yeah, I agree. And that's interesting. I can give you a little bit of a case study here, because just down the road from where I live, they've been developing a field into about 8 or 10 plots, right? And I've been watching these plumbing guys there. They've been working on the site for nearly a year now. And believe it or not, they've actually put the plumbing down, dug it up, put the plumbing down, and dug it up no less than three times, right, so far, right? And they seem to have made huge mistakes in terms of either they've put in the wrong place, or they've got broken bits, so they pulled out new pipes that got cracked, so they had to replace them, and then there's another piece where they actually didn't get it connected correctly. I mean, this is going on and on and on. I reckon that they're just doing it for the sake of doing it, right? I mean, surely you can get plumbing done right the first time, surely.
Well, look. I'm going to lob another scenario there, Martin, and this is because, again, it's something that happened last week to a tradesperson, a small builder that I know. They were owed $10,000, and the client didn't want to pay him. So what he did was he turned up to the property before the owner turned up. It was vacant. He turned up there, went there half an hour early, and wrapped some chains around the work that they've done, and basically, when the owner turned up, saw the chains around the piers that the new piers that they've built, what they were contracted to do, and he basically said, listen, I've done what the contract we agreed to, plus I've done more. out of goodwill, and now you don't want to pay my bills. I've got to feed my family. So it was, but you know, the owner had to make a choice. Yeah, you can either drive away and pull the piers down with as you drive away, or pay the bill. So yeah, all I can say is thank God they came to an agreement at that time. He still took a little bit of a haircut on his invoice, but you know, I said to him, look, the good thing is that although you may have dropped the final price, regardless of the fact that you did an extra $2,000 worth of work, you know, but to go through the litigation, to go through the all the issues, let alone more issues that you would have created if you did drive away and pull the those piers down, you would have been in a greater strife. Thank God you didn't do that. But you know, sometimes burning the hand is better than you know, than future litigation. The money in your hand is a lot better. So, and this is what I saw happening in 2005, 2006, 2007 with tradies that would pull out major pumps from high-rise developments that fed the water into the the sprinkler systems until they got paid, and that obviously the developers wouldn't get the occupation certificate until the plumber signed off. So it could be one of those scenarios, Martin. You don't know, because there's a lot of people, whether you be a developer, a builder, a tradie, or in that field, or an owner. That's there's a lot of pain out there, and financially, we're going to see a lot more businesses and people. We're going to see more reports of the of the issues that they're going through because of all these lockdowns. I mean, like we joke about what's going on in Victoria, but closer to home, it's also happening in Sydney with because people's health choices that they're making, and there's a lot of families that are suffering.
No, I agree. Yes, it's certainly not over, and even when we do reopen at some point, I think a lot of businesses are going to continue to struggle post that. Now, but of course, the hot news is that Sydney prices might be on the way down.
Well, the Channel 7 brought out this the video that I sent to you with regards to the new prediction that Sydney property market could be heading for a crash. And our good mate, Louis Christopher, speaks out about that, and I think he raised a point in his interview, and he was talking more about investors, I felt, than owner occupiers. Anecdotally, and with us, what we're seeing is that most of the agents that we talk to, most of our clients, around about 80%, 85% owner occupiers to investors. We know the reasons why, and the investors that are getting into the market is because where else do they put the money? They're not looking at the investors that we're exposed to. The majority of the time are obviously come from the WeChat chatting groups, and they're the people that I've been talking about for the last few months that they're not looking at opening up another takeaway shop or another restaurant or small business. Now they're focusing on land, and that's where they feel that their investment is going to be more secure. Add to that the fear of what the Chinese government has done with regards to the restrictions of crypto, and what the possibilities could be for crypto as we know it. The current cryptocurrencies that are around. If a lot of other governments go with their own digital currency as well, which is one of the things that China and is pushing very hard on. Hence, they're this disdain, or they're trying to squash the all the Bitcoiners out there. So this is, I feel, this is going to be play out more with regards to the strata units, the strata complexes, the off the plan purchases. Than it is with freestanding homes, Martin. I don't see the figures supporting at the moment. This is at the moment. I don't see the figures of properties on market supporting the so-called property crash that predictions that, that the mainstream would like to play out. And the other, my other thing to that is, my other question to that is this a scare strategy as well for to get people that are holding off their listings to put the listings on market because the real estate industry is in a lot of strife? I mean, there's something like 42% less properties on market than there were this time last year, Martin.
Absolutely, yes. And the point there is we need to tease the market apart, right? Because we know that the high-rise sector and some of the new developments out on the edge of town are in some difficulty. But the demand for upmarket properties, particularly houses, particularly on relatively good plots, is very strong. And I was doing some research the other day looking at a couple of particular postcodes where prices are up, you know, 15%, clearly 15% over the year and are still going higher. But there are others where investment properties aren't actually working and people are trying to sell or want to sell, and some new off-the-plan stuff as well, out west, as it were. So you have to go granular if you really want to understand what's going on. And, you know, I got a call today from a journalist saying, so do you think property prices are going to fall? And I said, I think it depends. I think it depends where you look. I think it depends on what time frame you look over. But more importantly, you know, you've got to separate out houses from apartments and high rise from low rise and new property from old property, because you can't talk generically about what's going on. And that's the fallacy with the index, isn't it? You know, the sort of the, you know, the hedonic index. It's just one number, but it really doesn't tell you anything much at all.
No, you're 100% there, Martin. It doesn't. And this is what I put out in the tweet as well. With regards to the supporting numbers, and you can see the trends. Also, obviously, it's anecdotal. What we see on the ground, what we hear, the real estate agents tell us, and a lot of them are also a lot of the people that are looking to put the property on the market. When you ask the agent what the owners are doing or what the owners have told them that they're doing, why they're selling, a lot of them. Basically also want to travel interstate. They want to look further afield. They want to look, you know, go further north from Sydney. I'm talking about Sydney, obviously, you know, further north from Sydney or further south from Sydney. So they want to make their transitions. So whilst there's all this uncertainty with lockdowns, I don't know whether or not we're going to get those numbers for the freestanding homes to get to the 3,400 numbers that we saw in spring last year. Right now, we're only running at about 5,200, 5,230. Or we might even hit the 5,300 at best, and we're almost in the middle of the spring, and they're certainly not rising. I know that there's a lot of agents that have got promissory notes from vendors that they will be putting the properties on the market, but whilst the narrative of the little bug is still in the forefront. I think that a lot of people are questioning whether or not it's the right time to go on market. Now, I'm looking at the 11th of October as the first easing of these lockdowns. Then we've got the next milestone being the 1st of December. So, you know, are we going to get a rising numbers post the 11th of October, or are we going to get the rising numbers post the 11th? Now, that's also going to have to... what's also going to have to play out is, are the borders going to be open with other states? Because, as I said, anecdotally, we've got a lot of the chatter that we're privy to is that people are basically, you know, moving out from Sydney, want to go further into the regional or across the border into what would they consider to be the retirement states, which is, you know, Queensland and WA. But whilst there's those border issues there, who knows where the numbers are going to go? So, but I think what Louis Christopher spoke about in his short grab there in that interview, he hit the nail on the head, and I tend to agree with him. And that's, you know, a lot to do with investment properties more than anything else. And that would be, in my view, that was the short version. My long version is this: strata complexes, meaning medium to high rise development.
Yeah, that's where all the action is on the downside. And I had this last week the chance to speak to a couple of other people who got high rise investment properties that are vacant. The cracks are getting worse. the costs of trying to fix it up are getting worse. And now the question for them is, do I cut my losses and get out? Or do I commit to paying another $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 to try and patch this place up and, you know, under the strata arrangement to try and actually prop the value up to be able to sell out later and not lose as much money? That's a really difficult dilemma, I think, for an individual owner at the moment.
Yeah, and you throw into the mix there the issues that we were talking earlier on with regards to getting things done within time, the expediency. There is no expediency anymore. Try to get things done through ANCAT, through the tribunal. Try to get things done through the courts these days. We said it mid 2020. We were discussing the issues that were going to be unfolding from that. Now, at the moment, I am involved in three matters, assisting sellers and assisting solicitors with their clients to put properties to market. But now, I can say to our viewers is that it's finally come to the point where the banks are really putting the squeeze on these clients, but it's taken them 3 in one case, 2.5 in another, and almost 4 years with the other matter. So that's how slow things are going. This is why the delinquency, as we said in our last chatter, and that was one thing is mortgage stress, another thing is delinquency, and the delinquency is going to be again drip fed into the market. And they're all in agreement. The banks are in agreement with these matters. They prefer for the contract of sale not to reflect mortgagee in possession, because obviously they themselves don't want to what the parties owe to the bank, and when you take out all the costs and all the solicitors' costs and fees and litigation and agents' commissions and everything, there's not enough in it, even if you get top dollar for these properties. So they've also got to be careful. So hence the reason why they don't want to be. So the delinquency side of things is going to take a lot longer. Now, you and I, we were sent an email by one of our followers with regards to the issues that they're having over in Orange with one of their properties. They had the insurance companies send their tradespeople to assess the issues. The people that that put the roof trusses in, sent their inspectors. And as I replied to that email in trying to assist the poor bastard that's going through these issues at the moment, I said, look, there's no point in moving forward unless you get your own personal building inspection, your own personal inspectors and engineer to assess the issues before you approach ANCAT and before you approach before you go legal, because the insurers and anybody else that's done the work and their insurances, they're not in the business to give money away. They're in the business to protect their assets. So in order to expedite things, you have to do a lot of the work we would otherwise have waited for the authorities to do or the regulators to do, which they won't. And if you do, you're going to be waiting a very, very long time.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's the point, of course, particularly now with the legal processes that are there, that really everything's ground to a halt. And what I also find is that you end up with experts at three paces, right? So everybody brings their own experts. You have this report, you have that report, and, nobody knows quite who's going to be right, who's going to be wrong. I mean, this can suck up a huge amount of time and effort and cost. So very important message once again, before you get involved in these sorts of properties, right, do the due diligence on the way in, because it's much, much easier to not go there in the first place compared with actually finding yourself in the middle of something simply because you didn't check on the way in.
Yeah, definitely. And it should stand at the forefront of everybody's mind when they're looking at these properties, whether it's a new home that's being built that you're going to take possession of. With new properties, you may think that whether it's Marston Homes or AB Jennings or whoever else, whoever's going to be doing the build, you might think that their reputation is going to hold, but Yeah, it's in your best interest to contract a building inspector to do inspections at specific milestones during the construction, because at the end of the day, they're just companies that are managing other tradespeople. That some of the stuff that I've seen with some of the major building companies are just eye-watering stuff that obviously nobody's the wiser, because a lot of these things get covered up in the building process, and you only get the new shiny properties at the end, and it's not until you're there for the next 6, 12 months or 18 months before things start going wrong, and you've got, you can whistle Dixie to try and get anything started through the tribunals or through those channels in order to recoup some of your losses. Research, do your due diligence, and buyer beware. It should be in the front of mind all the time.
Absolutely, yes. Unfortunately, some people still are getting caught. So we can only just repeat it again and again. Caveat emptor, do your own work. Make sure that you've actually protected your back on the way in, because it's much easier to do it then rather than on in subsequent litigation. And talking about litigation and about compliance, is it true that New South Wales is cracking down on the real estate sector? Can I believe that?
Well, as much as they can. They are under resources. You and I have been talking and been saying for years, and I've been screaming out at the top of my lungs for over a decade. Look, it's rather interesting. This article that's come out, that was posted on Twitter by George, who's been on your show. It was rather interesting article. But it just shows once again what you and I spoke about last year. What did I say with regards to trust accounts, Martin? It's the easiest. It's the easiest piggy bank to break open. Yes, it is. It is password protected, but guess who has the password? The thief.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to sort of wind the clock back slightly, right? Client monies should be insulated and held separately from monies relating to the carriage of the business. That's the basic principle, right? But as you say, unfortunately, in times of pressure, sometimes there is a trend whereby some of that trust account money gets raided to try and support the business. And it's illegal, it shouldn't happen, but it is happening, and there are various cases. But, it's interesting, isn't it, that even high up in some of the real estate circles, there is still quite a few people dipping in when they shouldn't.
Well, look, the ABC brought out an article with regards to the then REIA, the Real Estate Institute of Australia president, who was also the president of the Real Estate Institute of New South Wales, where him and his wife got caught with their hands in the cookie jar to the tune of $320,000 or $360,000. Our audience could correct me on that. I don't have the article in front of me. And this happened a few years back. And I was very vocal once again about it. And I said, look, trust monies or monies that are given to agents as holding deposits should be no different to where agents, when we've got rent rolls and we take on bonds, it should go to the rental bond board, and these are there should be something in place where these monies are separated from the workings of the real estate offices. I mean, especially when the industry is under so much strife. That's one thing that I've been talking about for many years as well. The other thing, Martin, is that these investigations aren't just recent. These investigations go back a while. And this is what we've been saying since 2018, 2019, where the sales numbers were going down. And I was saying, be careful. And I was calling out Fair Trade in New South Wales and saying, be careful. You need to put more emphasis and you need to put more onus on protecting the monies that are in real estate agents' trust account, because the only thing between them is a password, and that password is held by the licensee in charge anyway. So when businesses are in strife, it's just a big temptation, and that temptation gets bigger with the more you owe. But interestingly, in this article, the people investigating these agencies, they alluded to historical reasons as to why real estate officers put their hand in the cookie jar. Yeah. So in part of the article, the investigators actually state that in the past we've seen real estate agents using trust account funds for gambling, alcohol, and drugs. In some cases, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, which is rather interesting. And these are the things that obviously it's an industry, it's a body that we've said, although people are having great gains in capital growth of their property, the real estate officers aren't necessarily winning out also, or very few are, when you start looking at the numbers as well. When we start looking at it, as you say, Martin, as your famous words are, when you start looking at it granularly, when you start looking at the real figures, when you start looking at what's at play, and we start looking at the fact that there's 47%, 42% less listings on market. There's obviously less commissions to go around, and as a matter of fact, over the last 2 years, there's been an increase in real estate agents' certificates than previous years, which is rather alarming. An industry that's going backwards in terms of fees gained. But yet there's more people wanting to join the industry. It's just one of those things.
Mm. And it's interesting because if you look at it carefully, there's a bell curve, right? So there are some doing quite well in the middle of the bell curve, right? And there'll be a few doing really, really well, but a whole lot not doing at all well because they don't have enough transactions. They've got rising costs. And you've been calling this out for some time, and I've been seeing it too in my surveys. So it'll be interesting to see what the shakeout absolutely is over the next 12 to 18 months. I'm expecting there to be one.
It will be. It'll be major. As we've said, one of the positive things, as it is a positive show, Martin, one of the positive things about this little bug that interrupted our lives in early 2020 is that it gave the real estate industry a lifeline. I'm sticking to it.
Absolutely. Now, you are suggesting we should say it with flowers.
Look. When I woke up this morning, Martin, it's a positive. It's a positive week. I'm very colourful today, so it's all about positivity. I've been talking to the people that would otherwise frustrate me on the phone. When you spend an hour or 2 hours on the phone waiting for things to get done, the poor bastards on the other end of the line trying to do their job. I've been very, very tame and very, very polite. And then this light bulb moment just hit me. And I just said, the tip of the week has to be, turn up to the next property inspection and give the agent a flower. How's that? That is going to be gold for you in order to obtain the information that you really want to obtain. I feel that's going to be the key to unlock the agent's secrets as to, one, why the owner's really selling, what the true expectation, and obviously information that's invaluable to you to see or know whether or not you're going to be wasting your time. So give the agent, the selling agent, a flower week is what I'm calling as the tip of the week, and you will get troves, you will get loads of good information that you can assess how far you go with that, investigating the whether or not you're going to pursue that property. How's that?
Yeah, very good. Now, we should even take that further and say, well, it depends on which flower you select, right? Do you go for the rose? Do you go for the daffodil? Do you go for the waratah? I mean, you've got a big choice there.
Stay simple. Steer away from those flowers. Those flowers that eat bugs. don't go offering anything venomous. Don't go giving poison ivy or anything like that. just stay simple and just say, look, this is for you. I know your day is probably frustrating, and then as you walk around with them, I am sure that they'll, whether it's male or female, regardless, just give them a flower. Prepare yourself with that and let's see how you go. I've been getting some DMs as to from the previous tip of the week, Martin, with asking the agents, don't ask them for a price guide, ask them for a vendor's expectation. And I've been getting some good DMs as to, people saying that they've done that. And it's really put the selling agents on a bit of a bother, and and they start arming and arring, and obviously they realise that the guides is way below what the expectations are, and that way you don't waste time, because time is of the essence, particularly when there are limited times that you've got to invest in looking into a property or properties that you may want to make a decision on. So, it certainly avoids a lot of that frustration, anger, anxiety. If you do go and bid online, and you feel that you've been dated, it'll avoid all that. It has, and I've been getting some good DMs with regards to that. So this is a little bit a step further, and give the agent a flower.
Very good. Well, I'll see whether that pays dividends for people. I'm sure they'll DM you appropriately, Edwin, as they always do. And as always, tip for the week, definitely worth hanging on to the end to get it, because they're gold, aren't they?
Hopefully it's of use. They're of use to the people. We've made some good calls, some good tips. And they're practical. We try to keep it as practical as we can, Martin, with regards to this. And all the best to our viewers, our followers out there, because I know that the more you use our tips, the more competition I end up with out in the field, Martin.
Fair enough, Edwin. Once again, thank you very much for your time tonight. And always good to catch up with you. And we'll do the same again next week, eh?
That's a plan. And I'll see you next week.
See ya. Bye.